It's The Morning Show. I'm Keely Voltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. And we're dedicating an hour to poetry today as we consider its power. Our guest uses specifically chosen words and phrases to describe the nuanced beauty of nature. And it's all through the lens of her Indigenous perspective. You're part of the conversation with a former Wisconsin poet laureate. What do you want to know about writing good poetry? Do you struggle to get the words onto the page, or does it just flow out of your mind? What's your poetry writing process? Join the conversation at 800-642-1234. There's a line for you now, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Kimberly Blaser wrote the book of poems called Copper Yearning. She was the Wisconsin Poet Laureate for 2015 and 2016, and she teaches creative writing and Native American literature at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Kim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Happy 2020.
Thank you, and same to you. For you, poetry has a spiritual role. Some people don't really understand poetry. Where does it fit into our lives?
Well, I think that poetry, I always talk about it as an act of attention. So it allows us to re-see something that we've already seen. So to not just see the surface, but to go deeper. And sometimes we can do that by, you know, paying attention to something more closely. In poetry, we might bring an image before the writer. It might be the musicality of the language that transports us. But in general, I feel like it engages us with the world in a deeper way. And a lot of times that's a more spiritual way.
That sort of critique of poetry that, you know, does it really apply to me? You were aware of that when you were Wisconsin's poet laureate. You said it seemed to have kind of a bad reputation with people. Some people are afraid.
Well, I think that in some ways, people experience in school oftentimes a teaching strategy that tells them that there is one way to read a poem, and the poem is almost like a mathematical formula that, you know, X plus Y equals Z. And in fact, I try to encourage people to instead think about poetry as an invitation, and that it's true that poetry can be what people call difficult or complicated, but it'll meet you where you are. You can enter a poem and get something in that relationship, and you may get more later, but you shouldn't let that stress you out. You should just feel like it's intriguing to, you know, to unlock the puzzle of the poetry. So as I said, it's like, sometimes there's symbolism, sometimes there's play with language, there are patterns, there's all kinds of ways that we can engage with the poem. But also a lot of poetry is narrative, so it tells a story. And that's accessible. We're used to storytelling, right? And I also feel like it's, again, if you allow the sound, the sonic elements of poetry, the musicality to wash over you, that in itself can communicate something to you. So I feel like if people could simply get over the idea that it has one answer, you know, that's the way it's presented in school, and instead feel like it's an invitation to enter into new ideas, new experiences, and allow themselves to go there, that will be helpful.
You are so speaking my language here, because I'm thinking about enjoying reading poems, but also being afraid that I'm not getting the right thing out of it. Like, I'm trying to figure out what the author wants me to take out of it, because I don't want to get the wrong thing or miss something or misinterpret what the poem's supposed to mean.
Right. I totally get that. And that's, you know, that is what students fear and what people in general fear. But I think that it's not to say that you couldn't completely misinterpret a poem. You could completely misinterpret a poem. But most of the time, if you're working with the language that's in front of you, the way it's on the page, the sound of it, the images, you know, what pictures does it present to you? What story does it tell? You're going to understand and feel some element of what the author intends you to feel. But I also, in my own work, I try to leave a space. You know, there's an ambiguity in poetry. And not everything is in the poem. As I say, poetry is a gesture. It asks us to call up other experiences, ideas, understandings. So because a poem is small, you can only have so much in there, but you're trying to awaken in the listener, the reader, their own understandings, ideas, experiences that they can bring to the poem. So they are populating the poem with something they already know, right? They've already experienced. And so that is a fuller experience. So that's why poets use very particular images. People think, oh, the broader it is, the more people that can relate to it. But in fact, it's the opposite. It's the more specific will make you feel and will bring you to other specificities that you've had that are similar to that, right? And so it allows a space for the reader to imagine, to experience the experience themselves. And that's what we should release. And so I try in my poetry to literally leave space on the page, but also to leave a certain opening in the poem for the imagination of the reader listener. And also the poem just, it wants to be ambiguous. It doesn't want to tell you everything there is. It wants to invite you on a journey, right? And so at least that's my aesthetic of poetry.
Kim Blazer is a poet. Her latest collection explores our sense of place and identity. And we want to hear from you. Maybe you have a favorite poet or a favorite poem. Tell us why you love it. What piece of poetry really sticks to you? Or maybe what kind of poetry draws you in? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Kim, you wrote a poem about the Apostle Islands, and I'm wondering if you can read some of it for us to give us a small taste.
Sure, absolutely. So this was written for an Academy of American Poets project where they wanted state poet laureates to write about a national park. Well, we have this national lakeshore in Wisconsin. So I actually visited the Apostle Islands as inspiration and spent some time there. And I wrote, this is a fairly long poem, but there is a section that I think you were interested in near the end of the poem, the last section. Beyond the flat fact, Apostle Island histories overlap. Stacked like horse skeletons at the bottom of each ravine, the glimpse of steamer spines in clear water, the sunken and mummified hemlock and bird's eye maple, salvage logs now kilned and carved to fine grain guitars. So the past is hollow bellies of Anishinaabe canoes, is the echo of old names and the weighted fill of rocks, birch bark given to winter waters for preservation.
I'm sorry I stepped on you there. A beautiful poem, and also really showing us what you just told us about the specification of the poem, and by getting those little details, you're really bringing us there. This is not the only poem we will hear from Kim Blazer this morning. She's a Wisconsin poet out with a new collection, and we're talking about her poetry and the place for poetry in our lives. Taking your calls this hour. Do you like poetry that follows a specific format? Maybe you write about it yourself. Do you like to write about things happening in your life, past experiences, history, the beauty of nature? Join us. Tell us why you are gravitating toward poetry, why it makes a difference in your life. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234, and you can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Our conversation continues this hour. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. When I was born, my grandma's older sister wrote a poem to me and about me. She got it printed in a book, and I remember pulling the thin hardcover off of the shelf. It's this rough, dusty blue color. And I'd crack it open to the creased page where my poem lives. I could slide that edition off the shelf now, but that's not really necessary. I know the poem by heart. Poetry's personal. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. There's room for you in our conversation about poetry. Do you have tips for people looking to get into reading poetry, maybe because they're intimidated? Do you have trouble reading it, or does it just make sense to you when you pick up a new poem and read it? Maybe you go back to the oldies, the goodies. Tell us about it at 800-642-1234. Our guest is Kim Blaser, former Wisconsin Poet Laureate. She's put out a new collection of poems called Copper Yearning, and poetry for her, too, is personal. You know, Kim, we just heard a poem about the Apostle Islands and or a section of it. And, you know, before you even started reading, you had this beautiful color to explain why it's so important to you and to, I guess, us.
So, yes, I think that part of the way that poetry is personal to me. And I love the fact that you said you knew that poem by heart.
Oh, I do.
Because,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one of the things I also did as Poet Laureate was to start this project around memorization, which used to be an art and is kind of lost. So we would have these big events where people would come out in mass, you know, 30 people, and we would all have memorized a poem and we would recite them and videotape them. And now there's a map you can go on and look at people and hear people reciting their poems. But personal in the sense that a lot of times it traces your own engagement with the world, your own experience. In my case, it also, you know, engages with Native history, with and in general with place, with our sort of apprenticeship to our own journey in the world, the way that we engage with nature and so on. So I feel like it always arises sort of through you in that way, that it turns around. You have an encounter, it turns around and hopefully comes out on the other end with some poetry.
Yeah, and tell us more about how your experience as a Native American woman has shaped your poetry. You're an enrolled member of the Minnesota Chippewa tribe, grew up on the White Earth Reservation, and that influence, you can feel it in your poems.
Well, I hope so. And I feel like, you know, that is the lens through which I view the world. That's the way that I am in the world is an Anishinaabe woman. And I think that part of that has to do with my understanding of our relationship with the natural world as one of a reciprocal relationship where we have a responsibility as well as we reap all of these wonderful benefits. But I think that this sense of being engaged in actively a part of a world and not like some, you know, sitting in some arena watching things happen, that we are small in this immense place. And that's part of the beauty of it. We're nothing and we're immersed in everything, right? I recognize, you know, the animate world, like things that people may think of as inanimate or, you know, insignificant, have a significant role really in our reality and can teach us things, play a role in our survival. You know, we don't often think about that, but so I feel like that's part of my work is to honor that understanding of ecology and relationship with place. But also, I believe that a lot of my work also dedicates itself to correcting some of the inaccuracies in mainstream histories about Native people, to telling the stories of those people who may not have had the opportunity to be recognized in their own life or who were too busy just trying to survive to actually tell their own stories. So I pick up some of those voices as well in my work. And then, of course, you know, I'm interested in conditions today for Indigenous people around the world, and especially how those, you know, the Indigenous knowledge can contribute to the survival of the planet, right? So all of that feeds into my work. Sounds very heady, but it feeds into the work in a poetic way.
Well, that works, considering we're talking about, you know, your fourth volume of poetry. Kim Blaser is a former Wisconsin Poet Laureate. She teaches creative writing and Native American literature at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And as you talk about trying to challenge these historical accounts of Native Americans through your poetry, we want to make sure that you have space to read your poem. This one is Estate of Chief Black Kettle, 1813 to 1868. Would you please perform that for us?
Absolutely. So it has an epigraph that is from Black Kettle, and that reads, "That we may not be mistaken by them for enemies." Peace medal from Abraham Lincoln. 34-star American flag presented by Colonel Greenwood, flown over his teepee to stave off attack. White flag of truce, appointment as chief in the Cheyenne Council of 44, official papers declaring him a good friend of the United States, treaty at Fort Laramie, treaty at Fort Wise, peace settlement at Fort Weld, perpetual peace in the Treaty of Little Arkansas River, Medicine Lodge Treaty, title of peace chief, livestock, 21 horses and 6 mules, valued by U.S. at $1,425 after their destruction at Sand Creek. 9 bullets removed from his wife Medicine Lodge later after the Sand Creek massacre. A rally of bullets to the back while retreating at Washita River. Portrayed as good Indian in television's Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman Memorial at Black Kettle National Grassland.
You really hear, you know, two-thirds of the way through the tone change. The fact that we have all of these, you know, what we would describe as accolades. And then you bring in the things that Chief Black Kettle took away that were really horrible.
Right, right. So the idea of that sort of inherited, you know, his estate is this inherited violence, right? Even though he was noted for being a peace chief, a peacekeeper. So that was written on one of the anniversaries of the Sand Creek Massacre. And there was a special issue in a volume, and I was invited to write some poems for that. And that was one of those for that. So just that, you know, because I think sometimes when I teach Native literature, for example, it's astounding what people don't know. Because even though in the state of Wisconsin, we have Act 31, which says you have to teach Native history, culture, et cetera, in the schools, for example, this semester I had a handful, maybe 6 or more education majors, and they said, no, it's not taught. They don't know. They didn't know most of the history that we learned by reading the poetry and literature. So I think it's important to still bring that out so that we understand, as we always say, if we don't know our history, it could be repeated. And so I think that's what part of the reason that I want to highlight some of the details of Native history.
Thank you for taking us down that road. Now, Margot from Madison wants to join this conversation about poetry. Margot, thanks for being here.
Hello.
Hi there. What are you thinking this morning?
Well, I'm thinking about Robert Frost and would like to quote a couple of his things and as to exemplify my position on poetry. As a person who loves poetry, it runs in my blood veins, my family has written poetry for generations. I write poetry sometimes still. Robert Frost said, a very simple, the shortest poem he ever wrote, pretty things well said. It's nice to have them in your head. I committed to memory many poems to comfort myself on occasion. Now, he said something else in an essay, and I think that this states my position. I'd as soon write poetry without any rhyme or meter as play tennis without a net. I think today's poets are writing sometimes inspirational essays that ramble on but have no melody, no beauty. They're inspirational essays. And I respectfully suggest that your poet is in that category.
All right.
Well, I appreciate your call, and I also know some Robert Frost and enjoy his work. I do write some poems in form. I often write haiku. I write sentos. I write. I just wrote a sonnet the other day. So I do write in form, and I teach form in my classroom. But I unlike you, believe that poetry can be both free verse and formal.
Right. And
following the.
Yeah, Kim, we'll talk more about the variety of the styles of the poetry that you have and why you choose those options. And this is a great example of how different people can have different perspectives on poetry, talking with poet Kim Blazer. And we're taking your calls about your theories on poetry and how it speaks best to you, how that might be different than other people. 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org is our email address. We continue the conversation right after the news. I'm Keely Boltina, and this is the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, in for Kate Archer-Kent. The poems in a new collection from Kim Blazer don't follow a prescripted format. Some are left aligned in straight stanzas. Other words drag across the page with extra spaces and different margins, creating a clear visual impact before the brain can even read the words. We're talking about poetry this hour, and we want to know, what does poetry mean to you? How does it make you feel? Do the poems you read follow a specific format, or do you like it when it's a little less defined? There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email at ideas@WPR.org. Kimberly Blazer teaches creative writing and Native American literature at the University of Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, out with her fourth collection of poetry called Copper Yearning. And Kim, we kind of left off talking about the different styles of poems and how they can look and feel different to people. Why do you choose so many different ways to present these stories to us?
Well, I feel like one of the things that poetry has at its disposal is space and absence, right? So I want to use the architecture of the page as well. So some of the poems are engaged in that. When you said they look different on the page, sometimes there's that. I also am using a form that's become more popular recently, which is erasure, where something is not there, and I actually sort of allow it to visually the poem to sign that it's not there by how it looks on the page. I've been working with sentos, where you are actually using found language that are in other places to create a poem. So the whole poem is constructed of other people's language, which you put together in a way. I often work in haiku, and that is one of my favorite forms that I write in. And it actually has, I have that particular bent because it is similar to song poems in the Anishinaabe tradition, which are dream songs. And so it brings together both of my my Anishinaabe background and my love of poetry, because they have a similar form and they have similar intentions. I have engaged in the past, I used to do a lot of pantoums, and I think one of my earlier books has those in them. But I like to see, you know, kind of let the subject and what I'm trying to accomplish indicate for me what I should do with the poem. And so the one that I just read a bit ago was a listing poem, right? It was a listing poem, which is another form. And I do use a lot of times, I'll use internal rhyme. I'm not really an end rhyme, although my pantoums often do that, but I don't usually tend towards end rhyme.
And the way you put the poem on the page, certainly we can hear it when you read it, but when we read it too, it sets a cadence for us. It helps us interpret it and understand how we're supposed to read it and how you want us to interpret it.
Right. And a lot of people have described my poetry as incantatory, and that it sometimes does literally draw from traditional musicality in Anishinaabe traditions. So that's part of what informs it sometimes as well. And then I also do physical poetry, you know, concrete poetry. So I think the opening, or well, maybe it's early in the book, maybe it's the second or third poem in the book in Copper Yearning, is in fact a physical poem where it's laid out on the page. So in this case, it's also bilingual. So, but it's laid out on the page so that the image, if you look at it, the title of the poem is Dreams of Water Bodies. And it is about the myth of the earth diver that is important to understanding our relationship with the world. But you can see that on the page, the language looks like an earth diver, an animal diving into the water. And I've done other kinds of physical poetry. One in a former book was, it looks like the old-fashioned kerosene lantern. The poem actually looks like that on the page. So it's kind of fun to do those things as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned Dreams of Water Bodies and how it's bilingual. There are other places in your book, though, that you're not, putting the translation side by side for us. And, you know, I speak English and I don't understand all of those words. And so when I come upon a word that's in a different language, what do you want me to do about that? Should I be Googling it? Should I be trying to sound it out? Should I be looking at the context of the poem and trying to figure out what's there? What should I do with that?
Sure. Most of the time, what I do is I try to allow the poem to communicate through the context. Mm-hmm. Like I might give that meaning. Sometimes I'll give it immediately following that word or prior to it or in a line or two beyond so that I think you can understand the meaning or basically understand the meaning from what's in the poem itself. There are a few instances where there are longer phrases in Anishinaabe Mo'en, and those I feel like, again, the poem can survive if you don't know word for word, but it gives you the context and the essential element of meaning that is also communicated in that language. But there are poems where there will be, I'll use an asterisk and give a little explanation at the bottom, or a translation. But most of the time, I want the poem itself to contain what the reader needs in order to understand it.
Kim Blazer is the former Wisconsin Poet Laureate we're talking with today. She teaches at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and we're having a conversation about her poetry and about poetry more generally. You're part of our discussion. You can call 800-642-1234. If you have a favorite poem or poet, you can share that with us. Perhaps you write poetry. We can talk about where your inspiration comes from. Share your story with us at 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Kim, let's hear a little bit more poetry. The next one on our list is an excerpt from your poem, Pika.
Okay, so this poem, I think, sort of celebrates place and our relationship with place and our hunger for place. And I assume that you understood, and probably people do, is that pika is both that allusion to a form of, you know, writing, but it's also this interesting medical condition that some women experience when they're pregnant, where they want to eat weird things.
Right, things that are not food.
Right, things that are not food. So it's sort of alluding to that in the poem. And if you look at it on the page, as you noticed, there are things that are not words. There are, I make use of symbols that sort of are from maps, the way we see things on maps. So I can't really read those out loud, but they are there. Pika, eat the upside down V's of forest. Each small stuttering dash of rustic roads. My petals devour miles. My shaded eyes names Bigfoot Beach, Devil's Lake. The taste of mythology on my tongue. This cartographic hunger.
Why did you choose to frame nature like this?
Well, I wanted it again to be interactive in this way that we are searching, and there is a sense of we're mapping our place in the world, right? And that was only part of the poem, as you know. So there are other images as well. But the idea that the poem becomes a journey itself. And in this instance, I wanted it to be that sort of, you know, our engagement with literal physical maps is not as frequent. We have GPS, right? But there's something about, just like there's something about having a book in your hand, there's something about having a map in your hand, and that mysterious kind of seeking that we do when we're looking for places and discovering new places is to me parallel to what we do when we're engaged in a search through a poem. And so I wanted to bring those two things together.
Anna from Madison emailed us at ideas@WPR.org, sent us a poem called Heading West on Highway 54. I'll read it here. Ooh. It says, "My horoscope said today is a 10. You're driving, I'm riding, in a Cadillac convertible through the pouring rain, soaked to the skin and more. Lightning stitches through clouds, flashing like a mirror ball. We got Benny Goodman on the radio until the station hisses and fades out of reach. Up ahead, headlights shine, small promises that break like dawn just beyond the hill." Anna sent us that and says that she's had it published. What role does publication have in our poetry? I mean, does that sometimes feel like it's more valid, or shouldn't we worry about that? Should we just write?
Well, that depends upon the individual, I think. Most people, you know, want to share their work, to have it engage with an audience in the making of the poem and that, you know, the experience of the poem. But there's no reason for that. If you're content, if what you want to do is express yourself and play with language and create poems for you, for your family, or whatever, that's perfectly fine. But you'll find that most people who consider themselves writers do want to send their work out into the world and to let it go into another space and, you know, to let it be somehow doing something in the world. I think of poetry as both affective, you know, and effective, beautiful as language and doing something in the world. So I have both goals with mine because I want my poetry to accomplish something as well. I want it to be beautiful as poetry and I want it to do something in the world. So if people are, you know, interested in publishing, there are so many venues today, both online and in print. And there are places to perform poems, to engage in poetry community. So I think you can have both worlds.
Poet Kim Blazer is out with her fourth collection of poetry. We're talking about her work and taking your thoughts and questions about poetry, even your poems. Give us a shout at 800-642-1234. Let us know about how you connect with poetry, what resonates with you, topics, strategies, the way it looks on the page. Tell us why it matters. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We've got former Wisconsin Poet Laureate Kim Blazer talking with us, learning about the craft that went into her new book of poems called Copper Yearning. And she's taking your questions about writing and reading poetry. There's still time for you at 800-642-1234. Talk to us about how you write poetry, what you like to bring into the conversations. If you have a hard time writing poetry, maybe we can get some tips this conversation. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email us ideas@WPR.org. And Kim, we've got Cayenne in Sheboygan who wants to join the conversation. Cayenne, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you so much for having such a great program to listen to as the sun comes up. So I've been a big appreciator of Kim Blazer since her book Trailing You years ago, decades ago. And Copper Yearning is such a beautiful example of the kind of organic poetry that we need these days. There's such heartbeat and music to her work. And so my first question is, where did you come up with the title Copper Yearning? And then I was hoping that you could talk a little bit about this beautiful musical structure that you just seem to have such prowess and just such a handle on. I mean, as a woman who loves nature and loves a more organic flow to what I read, I think you're I don't like the word master, Kim, but you're really in your element. This book is just exceptional.
Oh, Kyan, well, thank you for
so
calling
much.
In. Yeah, Kim, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say I recognize that voice. And Kyan was actually one of my students at UW-Milwaukee. She earned her MA there, and she's a wonderful poet and also a musician. So I appreciate the compliment. And about the title, so the copper has several different allusions, partly to some spiritual aspects of the Madewiwin and Anishinaabe tradition, partly to the mineral copper and the history around that, partly because if there is a color and color has a strange spiritual significance, that is the color that, you know, speaks to me and appears in so many different versions, you know, amber and so on, there's that about just that word. But also I feel like we all have this yearning. We have this search inside us. And that's how I characterize mine. And I noticed when I was putting together this book that there were, first of all, a lot of words that had to do with color in that, you know, that range, but also there were a lot of things about hunger and longing and search and yearning. And so I realized that that was one of the trajectories of this book. And the cover of the book is actually one of my own photographs from the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. We have a water access cabin there. And this was an evening after canoeing, and the sun was setting on the water, and it was casting these beautiful copper clouds onto the blue of the lake. And so the image is actually of reflection or refraction. And so that's, you know, some of the history of that title.
That's really, really interesting. And you did a beautiful job of describing the picture, because it does just really exemplify the title of your book as you put it together. I know that one of your goals when you were Wisconsin Poet Laureate was to bring poetry into more public spaces, places maybe we wouldn't expect, things like baseball games or sushi bars. How were you able to see that through?
Well, one of the most interesting events that we held when I was Wisconsin Poet Laureate was a group of poets wrote, I alluded before to Acento. So there was this event that happened in Wisconsin when there was a law proposed that could have jeopardized effigy mounds. And so there was, across the state, this effort to sort of educate people about effigy mounds and their legacy in Wisconsin and so on. And we held such an event, an educational event in Milwaukee. And it happened to be the coldest day of January in 2016. And we were at the lakefront where there is an effigy mound. And I had brought together, I want to say about 9 poets or maybe even 10, a group of poets. And we all contributed lines to create a poem. And then we were out there dressed, me in my ice fishing gear, and everybody is, you know, wearing as many warm clothes as they could. And we, a colleague of mine who does the Overpass Light Brigade, Lane Hall, had set that up in the back so it spelled out different words. And we did that poem. We had a song that my colleague Meg Newton created. So we did this whole event at the lakefront in January, just as the sun was setting in the evening, and it was beautiful. It was this amazing thing. And we often all talk about that and look back about to that moment and how important it was to us. And the television cameras were out. So it was a moment when people came out to both be educated, but also to participate. And we had, you know, quite a number of people who came out, like I said, coldest day of January. So that was probably the most unusual space. But also I was, Northwestern Minnesota, and I had stepped out onto the sidewalk and began to recite there, and people just came around. So we were citing on a sidewalk in a small town in Wisconsin. In Eau Claire, they have the Eau Claire Fest, where they have this, it's basically it's woods and farm field that they've converted into a space that they hold a music fest for 2 days. So on all kinds of outdoor stages, in the woods, strange places, reciting poetry and hearing poetry. So it's been wonderful. And I love that idea of poetry in public spaces.
We're talking to former Wisconsin poet Wisconsin poet laureate Kim Blazer about the craft of poetry this morning, and trying to help us make ourselves more comfortable with poetry, maybe a little more accessible to poetry. And Kim, that comes up too when it comes to the fact that there are going to be tons of visitors to Milwaukee this summer for the Democratic National Convention. And it sounds like you and a group of poets are trying to figure out how to bring them some poetry. What are your plans?
Absolutely. So we've had a couple meetings in Milwaukee, and people from Woodland Pattern Book Center and other places are gathering together ideas of a lot of Milwaukee, but also regional poets, and including the current Wisconsin Poet Laureate, Margaret Rozga. And we've all contributed ideas of what we might do, and are, you know, making a proposal to the convention people for funding to do these. And some of them, well, for example, my idea includes at UW-Milwaukee, every year, the Creative Writing Program does what's called Eat Local, Read Local. And they curate these small, like quarter size of a sheet, of 8.5 by 10 sheet of paper. So there's little cards that have very slight poems, small poems on them. And those, they're beautifully presented. And then those go to restaurants in Milwaukee, in Madison. And so when you buy dinner and you get your bill, you also get a poem. And so it's a really fun thing. So I thought that would be a great idea to do, like, feature 25 or maybe even 50, if we did double-sided on these cards, Wisconsin poets, and have those be in restaurants, have them be on the pillow when they do the turn down in hotels, and have them be in the welcome bag. So that was one of the ideas. But we've also talked about doing a cento, where a number of poets come together and create a poem, and they, you know, perform it together. Other people have talked about, you know, doing a poetry flash mob. So there's a lot of ideas out there, and I'm hoping that many of them will happen. But we're putting a proposal together very soon. It's going in sometime this week, I believe, and then we'll just continue to plan.
That sounds great. We'll pay close attention to what might happen as far as poetry coming this next summer. Kim, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking with us and describing your poems and giving us a little bit of insight into your process. We appreciate your time.
Great. Thank you. It's been wonderful to talk poetry, even at this time of the morning.
We appreciate it. Kim Blazer is author of a new collection of poems titled Copper Yearning. She was the Wisconsin Poet Laureate for 2015 and 2016, and she teaches creative writing and Native American literature at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina. You're listening to the Ideas Network.